You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes in the West Indianapolis Community News. Joining me on the other line, another person whose football team lost today, former Indy Cornrows writer Adam Friedman. Adam, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty well. Okay, it probably isn't going that great, but it's going okay. I mean, it depends how high expectations I had for the Colts coming into the season, and considering they probably weren't super duper high, it's not that disappointing.
Well, the Vikings gave up over 40 points, so not looking great in Skull Land either. But we are not a football podcast. We are both just suffering people. We are here to talk Pacers, and the perfect place to start talking Pacers is by talking about the Rockets, of course, which will all make sense in 2 seconds, because Saturday night, the Rockets officially eliminated by the Los Angeles Lakers in the playoffs, meaning their season is over, which we've talked about on the show before, is when the Pacers coaching search truly will heat up and get going, because Mike D'Antoni, their coach, as soon as the game ended, all the speculation ran wild of will he come back, will he not. It literally took one day for D'Antoni to announce that he does not plan on returning to the Rockets, and for the Rockets owner to comment that he's thankful for D'Antoni's time with the team. So the quickest departure and splitting of parties ever. I can't tell if it's a real amicable thing or if it's a you can't fire me, I quit situation. But
well, his contract was already up.
Yes, right. But I mean,
playing on no contract or coaching on contract.
But he didn't even say, like, I might come back to Houston. He was just like, bye.
Well, didn't he kind of say that last night a little bit? Or not last two, on Saturday night?
He kind of just said he's open to coaching wherever. But yeah, he was very intentionally vague.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like the owner wants to find a coach that will make a lot less money.
Yeah. So you.
Well, I think D'Antoni rightly thinks, right, he probably can make between 5 and 7 a year, and I doubt
they want to do that. So 67 years old right now, is he 69? I forget.
69.
He'll be one of the oldest coaches ever to get hired. I think that I was looking this up, the second oldest ever. I forget the Grizzlies hired a different
69. Yeah, but 60 or 70 is the new 60. I mean, like
Hubie
in the
Brown,
NFL, a bunch of what?
Hubie Brown got hired when he was 69 by the Grizzlies. I think that's the oldest hire of all time. Not that it matters. D'Antoni's still great, but.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of coaches get hired. I mean, a lot of coaches in the NFL are that age now. I mean, it's kind of very.
Top 71, yep.
I guess in the NBA, they're not, besides Pop, right? I mean, Pat Riley's probably at that age, but he's not a coach anymore.
Right.
Who else is that old? I mean, any other coaches, really? Not really, I guess. Right?
Not a ton are that old, but there's some.
I guess basketball's a more strenuous travel schedule than and the NFL, at least.
So, pick your favorite newsbreaker, Shams, Chris Haynes, Woj. I mean, everybody. Zach Lowe talked about it like weeks ago on his podcast. Has talked about the Pacers' rumored interest in Mike D'Antoni. That's why this is such a big deal. He could be the Pacers head coach. All the betting sites have him as one of the top two candidates, if you're interested in that mattering, for the Pacers job. Jay Michael, in an article for the Indy Star that released on Sunday, you should all go read, also says Mike D'Antoni has interest in the Pacers job. So, Adam, where should we start here? Do you feel like we're going to hear more about those negotiations very soon, or do you think he'll, because he's a former 76ers assistant, where do you feel like this process is headed?
Well, so there was, I think Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer also said that the Pelicans have shown a lot of interest.
I mean, everybody should be. He's a good coach.
Yeah, but I think the question is, it becomes how much does ownership or any of these teams want to pay for him? If they only have two or three teams bidding for him, he's going to get a higher salary than any of these assistants that are turning coaches will, because they're first head coaches and not probably in a bidding war between two teams.
I actually do have something I want to talk about with D'Antoni that is part of why he's going to be so expensive. And something and a lot of people say, when I see from fans that they do or don't want whatever with the coaching hire is a retread, and I understand that word meaning what it means. You don't want someone who kind of embodies similar things to McMillan or some guy who's going to come instill his whatever philosophy that has never won a title here. I understand that. I think with D'Antoni, it's never a retread just because of who he is as a coach, because everywhere he's gone, he's been known as innovative, right? Every team has considered him that in some way. He's challenged the NBA norms with his offense in Phoenix and in Houston. And again, has been on so many benches in different organizations because of that brain and the way he sees the game. So I understand thinking, a head coach who hasn't, I don't think he's ever won a title as a head coach. In fact, he hasn't, right? Nope. I can understand people going, oh, that's a retread. But to me, it's not, because of just the different dynamic he's going to for sure bring to your team.
Yeah, I mean, he has proven time and time again, really, that he's been able to sort of reinvent himself and take the players he has in the Venice system that works, run them the best. I mean, right, so he's coached, I believe, I mean, what, 14, I can think of the top of my head, Suns, Lakers, Knicks, and Rockets. The Knicks.
And if you count Philly, that's what I was saying on the bench.
Oh, well, like half a season, right?
Right.
He was more their head assistant and got the job for a little bit.
Yep.
Because they fired somebody that year, right? But mainly been where he's been. And really with most of those teams, he was pretty successful. I mean, obviously the Suns, he was really successful. It also helped that he had, you know, an MVP caliber player, and then probably at the time of top 10 or 15 guy in Amari to go with him. I mean, always helps to have talent. But even if like Houston, I don't know if he turned Harden into the player he did, but he certainly helped, I would say, like improve Harden on the margins, right? Harden went from probably being at the time borderline top 10 player to like a top two or three player in the league the past 4 years. I mean, look at his MVPs and runner-up MVPs pretty much every single year the last 4 years. So he's proven that. And when you give him the right talent, he seems to do okay, right? I mean, he doesn't seem to like compete. It just the Lakers and Knicks, they just weren't very good teams when he took over.
I think part of him too, and you see this with the Rockets, is he's good at assessing what the roster he has or is going to have, what the players on it are good at, and then tailoring what his offense or what the thing he's thinking of is going to be. And that, I don't think that means per se that, you know, he'd be like cool with two bigs or anything like that. But, you know, in Phoenix, what he did is drastically different than in New York, where it was more around Melo and less around a point guard and a center just flying around, to different in LA. That team was a million years old and really couldn't succeed, but, you know, tried different things there around Kobe and then tried different stuff around Harden. So I think that is part of the innovation that entices me to thinking he'd be a good candidate, even as an older guy who, you know, I don't know that his communication skills with players is good or bad right now, but, you know, that's something Pritchard's keen on. So he'd have to be good at that to get the job, I think. And something I like about him is that, right? He looks at the roster and he says, okay, I think this is a good way to get the most out of this player, or this system would get the most out of this roster, given that they're good at this. And I like that that could come here if the Pacers go that way. And all indications are they're going to try. I'm not saying they're going to hire him, but that they'll try to pursue that route.
Yeah, they also need a coach who can come in and immediately improve them into a win schedule, because next year is sort of a make or break year, I think, for the team.
It is.
I mean, if they've got to really compete next year, and they've got to show their players that they're competing. I mean, and the players have to compete at the same time, but they have to show whoever it is on the rosters. I mean, any of the top three players on the roster, they're serious about trying to win a championship, get close to it. And so you bring D'Antoni in, and hopefully just with his experience, he can come in and like improve your team from, let's say, they were going to be a 52 win team this year, I think, based on the win percentage, to becoming a 56 win team. Maybe they get a top three seed. Maybe they make it through the first, you know, two rounds somehow. That's what he can bring right off the bat.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. And those are the hardest wins to get, right? Going from 50 to 56 means the games you're winning that you weren't winning before are against the other good teams in the league. So, you know, that's what the Pacers need to do, is get the coach that can get them those wins that they aren't getting against the Torontos and the Milwaukees and the Clippers of the league.
Well, and we've consistently seen, at least in the East, a lot of the teams, the best team at least, don't care about the regular season. There's clearly a point. I mean, the 3-4 seed right now in the East Coast Conference clearly doesn't matter that much. Well, but
home court advantage is a factor there.
Yeah, for sure. That also factors into it a ton. But I think being a top three seed is a huge advantage in a first round matchup. And that's where it matters most for the Pacers, getting out of that first round. Because even if they're the three seed, right, that 3-6 game is just huge. I mean, I think next year there'll probably be six good East teams when you throw in the Nets, right? That will kind of vault that up. And depending where Philly and depending where Toronto falls, both will probably be good at that, competing for that 6-7. I mean, anywhere that 4-6 range with the Pacers as well. But there's just a huge advantage there. And then even in a second round series, you can see, like, if they were where the Raptors were this series, you wouldn't be disappointed in the team, right?
Right.
7 to a team that might make the NBA Finals is not disappointing. It's getting swept.
I think, any seven-game series in the second round isn't really disappointing. You know
what I mean? Yeah, exactly.
So something else I want to point out here about reporting from Tim McMahon, ESPN. Ban McMahon, for those of you who remember the good old ESPN podcasting days. This is a line in his story. He says, the 69-year-old D'Antoni has no desire to retire, and he's made clear, and hopes to coach at least another 4 seasons. So I think that's interesting, because something you just said is I think the Vic timeline being separate from the rest of the course timeline is pretty interesting because, you know, the roster could be shaken up in a year, but most of the rest of the core is locked up for multiple years to grow with D'Antoni. And I think if he is going to coach this team for 4 years, I mean, having the team locked up has to be enticing for him and for the organization to say, okay, we'll go to this era, you know, with Warren, Sabonis, Brogdon, Turner. We have all those guys for sure and whatever switch ups we make. But, you know, they have the core locked up for what appears to be the time that he would like to keep coaching for.
Yeah. And while it might not seem like 4 years a lot of time, I'm hard pressed to find a Pacer coach who's coached more than 4 years for the team in the past 25 years.
Vogel did. He was five, right?
No, Vogel only coached four and a half.
Oh, well, sure.
Right. Didn't he only coach three and a half? Maybe he coached four and a half. But I've been heartbroken. Well,
like most three, of the Alex Golden was all over this. Thank you, Alex.
So Bird was three.
Thomas was
Isaiah
three.
Was like one or two. Then Carlisle was like three or four.
Four.
Ryan was three or four. Three four. And a half. Vogel might have been four and a half.
And then McMillan was four.
Four. So yeah. Right. So that's about so the
Vogel was the longest one at four and a half, basically.
And yeah. And basically, that's because for two of his years, the team went to the conference finals. You just can't fire a coach like that.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, that 4 years lines up with that.
And, oddly, look at the two of the coaches Pacers have had are two coaches who are two of the top coaches in the league this year. I mean, one is competing in these conference finals. The other one I consider a top 3 to 5 coach.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that you know, beyond that, right now, Pop at 71.5 is the oldest coach ever. So D'Antoni being 73 would surpass that, assuming Pop doesn't retire or does retire. If you don't consider the age an issue, and I get why some could, including Pritchard, right? His big thing is the communication with players. I mean, that's quite the separation in age. But if you don't consider that age to be an issue, I think signing up for 4 years of him would be fine to me.
Yeah, I mean, the question I guess becomes is there a window the next 4 years, and is there a window good enough to win a championship the next 4 years? I guess that's the only thing. Like, right?
I don't know if that's an issue if you're hiring a good coach. It's his way of only coming.
The only way I would say it's an issue is if you think you want a coach that's going to be here for the long haul because maybe your team is going to peak in year 7 or 8, that maybe you would rather get a coach who can sort of lay a foundation and be decent for 4 or 5 years, but then can be good on a kind of a small reset, right? Is the peak of this team good enough to win a championship? I don't know the question. I don't answer that question. I think a lot of it depends on how injuries break, but – because, like, I think you made a case under Vogel, right? The Pacer team in 13, 14, and 12 was good enough to win a championship. Like, they were good enough. Now, things had to break their way, and they lost the best player in the league 2 years in a row, and that happens. But, like, they were at that level. I'm not sure this team at its peak is at that even that level.
They're a move away, for sure. I mean, the playoff results speak for themselves, yeah.
And so maybe you want a coach who's maybe going to be there for – who you can get in long haul for 6 years because maybe you're going to make a move in 2 or 3 years that's going to put you to that next level, right? I mean, sometimes you build – they have a young team, right? I mean, they're – All-Star is 24 years old this year. I mean, Brogdon's 27. I mean, Warren is 26. I haven't counted Vic yet, but that's a young core that at 4 years is still going to probably be all in their prime.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with you there. The last thing I want to mention with D'Antoni is the 76ers stuff because we brought up his, whatever, half year there, full year there, and how they could be a competitor. I think Woj reported the interest there. I think the thing with them is, look, if his organizational ties are really positive and he wants to go back there, they're going to be tough to compete with if the Pacers really want him. But at the same time, it's whatever he wants more. I think let me phrase that. I totally understand why the 76ers job probably is a bit more appealing to coaches just because you're guaranteed to have two stars and stuff like that. You know, who knows what's going to happen with their roster soon, though. I think would be the only drawback, right? If Embiid demands a trade at any time, no one really knows what his deal is, then all of a sudden it's not as appealing. But I can understand that being a very tough thing for the Pacers is having to potentially compete against the 76ers.
Yeah.
I think have a more appealing.
I think the difference is, and D'Antoni's been through this, right? The headache of a mercurial superstar, right? I mean, he's been with the Knicks who had Carmelo at the time.
Carmelo, yeah.
Right? I mean, and the Lakers you can make, right? I believe Coachman Howard was there too. And that's
I was going to say, wasn't he the Nash-Dwight?
Yeah, he was for a little. Yeah, and they left like after 2 years because he couldn't take it anymore. So, like, you know, you go to the Pacers, right, your ceiling might not be as high, but you might be with the team that's a little less of an issue. But I think the Vic thing could be a problem. I mean, that could be a thing. I was like, I don't want to coach a guy who has one foot out the door already. I want to, you know what I mean? I want a team. Because that's also an issue. Maybe hiring him is something that either Vic is going to sign a long-term deal or they're going to basically trade him. I mean, that's also the other thing.
You know who led the Lakers in win shares the season that the only full season D'Antoni was their coach?
Okay. Is it one of the three superstars?
Total win shares, right? So the whole season. It's not Nash because he barely played. And Kobe got hurt this year. So
no, it was Dwight Howard?
It was not Dwight Howard.
Okay, wait. Who else played on that team? I don't freaking know.
Let's see. Steve Blake, Pau Gasol, Jody Meeks, Kendall Marshall, Wesley Johnson, Nick Young, Kent Bazemore was their general rotation.
So like Pau did, I guess, right?
The leader in win shares in his longest season with the Lakers was Jody Meeks.
Nice. I mean, he didn't have very good teams in LA.
No, he did not. And Kobe got hurt. Like that season was a wash immediately. But yeah, so I think I really think he'd be a good fit and a good candidate. If you want to see more intricacies, Caitlin Cooper wrote a great thing about it. She's good at analyzing these coaches and applying it to the Pacers roster. But I'd be happy if the Pacers hired him, I think. So I don't know if he's my number one, and we'll talk about that later, but I'd be happy with that one.
Yeah, so I mean, here's a look at D'Antoni, right? He has won 60-plus games three times as a coach. That's not easy to do. Pacers only got that, I think, once in their franchise history. He's won 54-plus games, which is more than, obviously.
They've not won that much in a
Millen, right? Millen, they haven't won 50 games since that 13-14 season, I think, five times in his career. I mean, he has been – and then this season, obviously, he won 44, but it's shortened season, so take that for what that is. And this season, the Pacers would have won 55 games based on the win percentage. But that's something that Pacers haven't done, and he clearly knows how to get a team to like a certain level, at least if he has the right talent and can sort of figure out. The Pacers do have a lot of talented players, right? They're not like a team that's just like, you know, looking at a rebuild. They have three or four talented players who could get better if they had the right coaching and the right, you know, system, I guess.
Right. There's more stuff to talk about from just general coaching news and Jay Michael's article in the Indy Star, which is fantastic. We'll get to in a second, especially regarding Chauncey Billups. But first, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Roman, because talking about erectile dysfunction is not easy. Usually, men just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we just avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's safe, simple, and super discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. Getting started is super simple. You just go to roman.com/lockdownmba, and you'll get a complete online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. So go to getroman.com/lockdownmba today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your order of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/lockdownmba. Getroman.com/lockdownmba. All right. The other popular candidate in the Pacer for me that I've seen amongst fans, not the only one, but another one is Chauncey Billups. The Woj report started that, got his own article. Well, let's pivot to some local flair on that reporting. Jay Michael, the Indianapolis Star, says that while Chauncey Billups is among the more intriguing names on the Pacers coaching candidates list, he will not participate in the Zoom call scheduled this coming week to begin the interview process. So according to Jay Michael, they'll have to do an in-person interview if they want to talk to Billups. Adam, does this make you think there's more or less interest than you originally thought, or does it even affect what you thought the interest between the two parties is?
I don't think it affects anything. I think Billups is in a position where he thinks he's a desirable candidate, which he probably is considering his pedigree, and that he doesn't need to pass kind of the first round smell test, I guess might be what
that
kind of feels like, right? I think he thinks Billups, I will say, in the past, he's done a couple times, he kind of overplayed his hand a couple times, has missed out on opportunities.
Front office jobs, I thought, didn't he?
Yeah, he was like on the 10-yard line for the Cavs job at one point, and then he wanted more money. They were an offer, and that's understandable. I mean, he didn't want to go somewhere and be kind of paid cheaply because he thought it wouldn't be worth it or whatnot.
I couldn't remember.
So I don't know. I mean, the question to Billups is like, he has all the pedigree to be a good head coach, right? Or like what you would make of a coach, right? Point guard, MVP winner, still really involved in the game, super.
See, also Steve Nash.
Yeah, I mean, super, super involved with players and whatnot, but Nash did have coaching experience, right? Wasn't Nash kind of an assistant or something with the Warriors for a year or two? Maybe not coach, but like had some pedigree with the team. So there's some of that he had over.
With Durant, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think Nash was like a special assistant for a while with the Warriors. I think he helped. Like maybe something like that. So there was that.
Calling his experience zero with Nash might be a little fraudulent, unlike Chauncey, where it literally is.
Yeah. And you know, I think with Chauncey, it's a kind of a who kind of knows, right? I mean, there have been, I believe, didn't Doc Rivers do this path? Or wouldn't Doc Rivers kind of point guard turned radio or turned TV guy went, who became just a coach just because he was a really good announcer. And
I genuinely don't know his path, embarrassingly enough.
I believe that's how that happened. Kamari Jackson, I think, had a similar path too. I mean, this is not uncommon for coaches to try that. And I'm not saying you don't know how he's going to be as a coach. And the one thing too is he has good relationships with players, and that's a huge thing. I mean, that's a key to a lot of coaching jobs.
I'm surprised how popular he is from fans as a filler in as the coach, just because I don't know why I tripped over my words there. Just because he's never coached before, you know. I get why he'd be good, but I'm surprised how popular he is. But the big thing for me with him, back to what my original question to you was, I don't know that the no Zoom whatever interview thing matters at all in terms of reported interest between the parties. Right, if they want to interview him, they'll do it. They'll call him into Indy, but the thing that is appealing to me about him is, and potential to the team as well, as Pritchard talked about communication being so important to him with the modern player. Chauncey's only 43, 44-ish, just over 40, whatever. And according to J. Michael, I've seen this in the Woj report too, but not all these players. Billups has, quote, a strong relationship with Turner and Brogdon and Oladipo. So I knew about Brogdon and Depot from Woj, but I did not know about Miles Turner. So from the communication standpoint, I think he's got a head start there. Apparently he's been working with Marcus Smart too. So I guess that fills some of that Nash void we were just talking about and shows he can help a player grow and communicate with the player. So that is good. That does give him some marks in the positive column. So I think he could be good because of those things. And I'm really curious about what this different interview process for him means for his candidacy and if he could even be a good candidate.
Yeah, I would say this. As a player, I despise Chauncey Billups.
I keep seeing a lot of people say. Like, dude, this guy beat the Pacers and was a part of the Bulls, and you wanted to coach the team.
No, I mean, I don't care about that. I mean, I'm just saying as like an NBA hate, like, you know how you do, like, not as personally, but just as like a player you watch and you didn't like because he beat your team. I don't like him as that kind of thing. But I don't think that matters for coaching. I mean, if they interview him and he's a good coach, they should let him coach. I mean,
they think he's the best. They should absolutely hire him.
But the thing I will say about him, and that's what you hit on the best, is his relationship with players. And if he has a good enough relationship to get to basically keep your core intact, keep players happy, then that's like that might be more important than anything else, right? Frankly, right? If he this guy keep Vic in an indie and not wandering and kind of change that relationship, that's huge. But like, I don't know how easy that is to do, even if you're like a super close to a player. It just feels like a player that goes somewhere, he's going to go somewhere else. Like, it's just kind of the way it is nowadays.
So I think McMillan was direct with his players and players like that basketball-wise, right? Like, we've talked about that in terms of players who like playing with the Pacers and fit the Pacers' style is, like, no-nonsense kind of McMillan talking to you. But J. Michael's paragraph here says, the Pacers want more than a game coach. They want a stronger voice for the franchise than McMillan, who is reluctant to get involved too deeply with players and their issues on and off the court. That makes me feel like McMillan, outside of basketball stuff, was less involved with his players, if that makes sense. And I wonder if that's where Chauncey and what he's good at with players, what it seems like at least he's good at with players, could be a little bit better of a fit.
You have to remember, Jim McMillan is like two generations removed from these players, right? I mean, so like, if you talk about like, right, McMillan played in like the late 90s was the end of his career. Billups played 2010s probably was the end of his career, 11, yeah. 10, 11, 12, right? I mean, there's
13-year difference in age, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, there's just totally different generations, right? And McMillan also is kind of – Billups was kind of a player who kind of was a transition era, right? He went from probably being kind of the old school era that McMillan grew up into being – or played into becoming kind of the new, you know, spacing kind of era that he kind of became towards the end of his career. So, I mean, they're just completely different generations, which makes him easier to communicate with players and maybe the media too in that way. And so, I mean, there is some of that. I mean – I guess I would wonder why Billups would want the Pacers job specifically versus waiting around for one of those like key jobs. Like, I mean, the Pelicans, where you have a long leeway, right? The Pacers, he might, but like, you know, at least if you go to the Pelicans, you're coaching like a generation town in Zion, or if you go to Philly, you have to manage that, or you're at least in a bigger market. Like, it seems like he might want to wait for the right moment to just kind of, but if he wants to get coaching that bad, he might take any job, right? That also could be it. But
yeah, or take the big paying Ty Lue assistant job in the Clippers if Lue gets another head coaching job or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think though he doesn't want to be an assistant, it sounds like. I mean,
that's fair. I totally get that. Yeah.
I guess it just feels like he comes to a small market now. I would worry too, if he comes here, is he just using it as a kind of a stepping stone, right? He comes in, coaches really well for 2 or 3 years and jumps to like a New York or a LA, right? Because that's his goal ultimately. Yeah. But who knows? I mean, maybe he'll be okay with being Indiana. I just feel like we can do this in a second, but like, I think I'd rather roll the dice on one of those like lower level assistants who can just kind of make this like his like program in a way.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. The last thing I want to talk about with Billups is something we've kind of alluded to with him and with D'Antoni, but for different reasons, is something we talked about with D'Antoni potentially being an issue is, right, because they're already paying McMillan, the D'Antoni being expensive could be a big hurdle. And Billups' thing with the front office job in Cleveland, like you just said, was money, apparently, that they weren't paying him as much as he desired. So, to me, you know, I wonder if that hurdle could exist here. Now, the thing is, I think front office jobs pay less than coaching jobs.
Like, yeah, they do. They're going right
positive
for,
they do.
I mean, I'm not 100% positive because I think, like, some of the top GMs make more money than some of the top coaches. But, like, most of the time, I think GMs make between, like, $500,000 and $2 million, and coaches make between the top coaches between 3 and 7.
Yeah, so I doubt that's an issue just because those are different. But I wonder if his negotiating from the past could be an issue here. But I don't know.
I mean, here's the thing is, if money's an issue, then we wouldn't hear Tony's name floated, right? I really think like if money was really a problem here, they'd be like, because then Tony's going to cost 5-7. And the going rate for a new coach of Billups' caliber is 4-20. That's like the going rate, 5-25, maybe even, you know, depending on the opt and opt-out. But Derek Fisher got before. That's what Steve Kerr got when he started. That's just the going rate for kind of a new, you know, highly desirable coach. So I don't think in this case it feels like money is like the overriding factor, because if not, you'd be hearing them floating all these things. Maybe we're going to make most assistants that they hire first time. I think only 2 or 3 coming out to start. So it's just different, I guess.
Yeah. All right. I dig all that. You got anything else on the Billups stuff? The two free agents, the big free agents, basically, Billups and D'Antoni. I guess everyone of the person, it seems like they're interviewing, is employed by another team.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be interesting to watch the D'Antoni stuff for the next 2 weeks. I mean, how quickly do you think he's going to sign for?
I mean, so one of these coaches is going to be the domino, right? Whether it's Lou, I think it's only between Lou and D'Antoni, but one of them's going to be the domino that, like, okay, they're off the board. Like, everyone else can go get the guy that they want. I think that's what's going to happen. So,
you think it happens before the end of the playoffs?
Maybe. I mean, like this J. Michael's story says, is because it's Zoom interviews versus in person, I think there's going to be some logistics stuff.
Right. And the draft being delayed helps too, right?
Yeah, way delayed to like November now, 2 months.
Right. So, like, because, like, usually it's like, season ends January 7th, let's say, or 10th, draft 21st. You want to have a coach in probably a month before the draft just to be able to like help you scout. But now, no matter, season's going to be over before October. You'll have 6 weeks if you waited until October 1st, even.
So, but, you know, the Nets hired pretty quick after they got, not pretty quick, but the Nets hired.
Nets fired their coach in February.
Okay, you got me there. That's a good point. So, my answer is I don't know.
Theoretically, that's could have hired a coach in the pandemic. Now, I get why they didn't matter. Or just, they basically didn't care about being in the bubble, but they could have theoretically hired a coach in June.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Speaking of the Nets coach, sorry, Jackie Vaughn was their interim coach. Caitlin Cooper just wrote about him as well. Very good article again. I highly recommend reading all of our coaching breakdowns. But one more thing we want to talk about with coaches. Me and Adam have not talked together since Woj's big report about the 15 or so guys that they're apparently interviewing, and we want to break down our favorites from that list. And then maybe slowing down the coaching talk, but we'll see. So let's take one more break and talk about all those guys. And during that break, you know what I'm going to talk about. My favorite company to talk about on the show, Built Bar, because they make the best protein bars ever. They're one of the few people that sent us the products to try, and they were all delicious. I really loved the mint brownie one. It was my favorite. My girlfriend really loved the peanut butter one. There's a good peanut butter brownie one. They're 100% covered in chocolate, so they're soft and easy to chew, and their texture sort of matches the flavor. And now they have 6 new flavors, including caramel brownie and cookies and cream, which sound delicious. And, of course, if they're a protein bar, they got to be healthy, and they are. They're great for the health-conscious guy. But they're low calorie and low sugar while being high protein and high fiber. For example, the peanut butter one is 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, only 5 grams of sugar and carbs. So they're really good. If you go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, at checkout, you'll get $10 off your next order. So use that promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. So Woj I didn't know what to make of this. And we both kind of texted and spoke about this on the show. This is a long list of coaches. We both have said, like, there's no way they have strong interest in this many people. And it almost feels like not smoke screen. That's the wrong word, because it's not like a diversion, but it's just like a, look what we're doing before we hire the guy that we've had rumored interest in for over a year now, with D'Antoni kind of stuff. But, you know, I don't think they don't have interest in these people. You know, these are all high profile assistant coaches that we actually talked about a while ago when we were naming some assistants. So, Adam, do you just want to run through the list and then pick our favorites, or do we want to talk
about
the
ones? Worth mentioning too. I mean, I think you do something like this too, because talk to each of them for, let's say, 30 minutes, an hour, see if it goes longer, and you might all of a sudden notice one is totally different than the rest, right? I mean, that's how, I think that's how Brad Stevens got hired in Boston. He was on a list of probably 10 names, and they talked to him, and they realized, oh, this guy's like another level. We should just keep talking. I mean, I think he ended up being, I mean, right? I mean, because nobody thought Brad Stevens was going to become coach of the Celtics, because he was the Butler coach. He was a
meeting Butler to the Celtics,
Right. People thought, oh, next step, he'll be at IU or name a big college program. Then he might jump to the pros. But he went from Butler, where he was arguably, I mean, clearly overperforming by a huge ton, and got an MBA job. I mean, that's just like not expected. So I'm surprised there's no college coach on this list, but that's just me.
It is what it is. Yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah, and I talked about last Friday, like, it's kind of funny. There's multiple guys on some teams. But, again, whatever stuff. So when we went through, ESPN has, an article they update all the time about, like, the scuttlebutt on assistants that might be the next big thing in the league. And so we talked about some of those guys, some of these guys already, and we'll get into them. But the list that the Pacers are apparently, quote, seeking permission to speak to, according to Woj, was the Spurs, Becky Hammond, and Will Hardy. The Miami Heat's Dan Craig and Chris Quinn, the Dallas Mavericks' Jamal Mosley and Stephen Silas, the Milwaukee Bucks' Darvin Ham and Charles Lee, the Orlando Magic's Pat Delaney, the Minnesota Timberwolves' David Vanterpool, the Philadelphia 76ers' Ime Udoka, Brooklyn Nets' Jackie Vaughn, and Portland Trailblazers' Nate Tibbetts. That took me forever to get through because, again, that's a lot of names, which is kind of insane. Woj's article about the Bulls candidates, Adam, do you know how many names are on that list?
20.
Four.
Okay.
Four.
I've not paid this one.
So different coaching search sources strategies for these teams. But of that list, we've talked about, let's see, Hammond for sure, Dan Craig for sure, Silas, Ham, Charles Lee, Pat Delaney, Udoka, Jackie Vaughn on this show. So we've covered eight of those guys already. But do you have a favorite or a couple favorites from that list?
Yeah. So I have a top three if I'm going to read it.
Oh, okay.
So I think D'Antoni won.
Excluded from this list is Bill D'Antoni. I mean, but yes, you can include those guys. Sorry.
I say I just on my list of people I'd won, I would say D'Antoni won, Dan Craig two, Becky Hammond three. That's kind of, and then maybe Bill's kind of the four if he's serious or not.
Yeah, so I'm bummed out because Kenny Atkinson's been my favorite target since the beginning of this process. He's not included on this list or any rumors, so I cannot include him in my rankings, but
maybe he's going to become Houston's coach. Oh, no, they're probably too expensive.
No, I think he will be the Bulls coach personally. We will see. I don't know what Houston's going
to
do.
That's rough to go from the Nets, a team that probably can win a championship, to like the
Bulls. Yeah, but he did a good job building the old Nets core. I think that makes a lot of sense for the Bulls.
Yeah, well, then they don't have nearly as talented draft picks.
Yeah, my favorites of the assistants list, Hammond obviously has great resume. So she's really good. Pat Delaney from Orlando works on their offense and late game execution stuff. I talked about really liking him. And then we both talked about the two Bucks guys, Darvin Ham and Charles Lee, being guys we liked. So I think those are my favorites from that group. I think of the names we've named, D'Antoni or Dan Craig is my number one. Although I think we only know more about Dan Craig because his name got leaked first. So I'm almost afraid I'm giving him too much of.
Or maybe that's why he got leaked first, because he's a top
tier. That's true. And it's just enticing to look at what the Heat organization have been able to do since he's been there for so long, like 19, 17 years, I forget, so long, right, with championship runs and got a title in the G League, and think that he took a similar path to Spoelstra and checks so many boxes to me of like, okay, young guy who can communicate and, you know, has head coaching experience at a pro level, albeit the G League, but still. Followed the path of a legendary Heat coach. Also followed the path of the Raptors, who just hired Nick Nurse, and is coming from a Heat organization that has done a spectacular job at developing players and establishing a good culture. Right? You cannot carbon copy assistant coaches from one team to another and go, they're going to replicate what that team did, or else the pop coaching tree would be the best thing ever. But all those things are super enticing to me, which makes Dan Craig my favorite, I think, of all the assistant coaches named. And then like you, I also have D'Antoni on my list for the reasons we talked about in the first segment. That adaptability, that innovation that he has, I think is really impressive. So he's on my list. I don't really know who my third is. I think those two lead the way for me. But yeah, Becky and I guess Pat Delaney from Orlando would be my top four. But I don't really know after Becky if I have any strong opinions after the top three.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason I said those three names particularly is the Pacers.
The same three, though.
Yeah, well, the Pacers need to change their style, and all three are coaches either that play, either a head coach or coach for coaches who play that totally different style, right? Of this,
yep.
I mean, I can make a case the Spurs are the ones who invented space and pace before the Warriors had better players, frankly.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Right? I mean, 14, basically, that's what
the beautiful game Spurs, yeah.
Yeah, it's just that the Warriors didn't have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson who fit that system better than, you know, what was it, Danny Green and Patty Mills, basically. right? I mean, that's basically
what the beautiful game Spurs was like Ginobili and Parker and all that. But
but by 14, it was like Patty Mills, Green, and Kawhi. I mean, those were the.
Yeah,
no, it was
like, and Manu were ghosts. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it was a mix, but that 14 was kind of the right overlap.
This is a random tangent. Remember when Tony Parker played for the Hornets? Isn't that the weirdest?
Yeah, thing then ever had his quad tendon like Vic.
That was the strangest NBA thing ever to me for some reason.
But yeah, I mean, I think the Dan Craig is interesting just because I think he has like a really long pedigree that kind of helps. I mean, a lot of assistants in the league end up being assistant for 10, 12, 15 years, especially like you look at Eric Spoelstra's path, it pretty much mirrors Dan Craig's in a way too.
Yep.
Started as video coordinator, worked his way up. Pat Riley's kind of go-to guy and whatnot for a while. And so, I don't know, it just seemed like he has kind of that like deep pedigree where he succeeded in a lot of different like smaller leagues. And so he's kind of ready to make that jump. But yep. I mean, I think of those three are just kind of the top of my mind. I'm not going to say it's not one of the three. I'm going to be mad. I think if the Pacers find some guy they think has spent enough time and they think is ready, that's not the end of the world. But it feels like that they need to get somebody who is going to tell them they should shoot 43s a game because that will complete. No, I mean, that's the way this team has to sort of figure that out. I mean, I think they can still play a traditional center in Sabonis, but Sabonis can be shooting threes, first of all, just a couple of games. They'll be shooting 50 of them, but a couple of game. I think he can make them too at a better rate. I mean, he makes his 18, 20-foot jumper at a pretty decent rate. Why couldn't he make a 23-foot three-point shot? And then they just need to kind of play with more like pace, basically. I mean, that's just this half court game makes it really hard for their players at times when they've got all this, you know, speed and talent. It works so much better. So they need a coach that can bring that to the team. And that's who those three, at least, I think, will do that, I guess.
My final thing I want to say on this list, and I'm assuming you think the same way, but I'll just bring it up, is I don't think I'd be disappointed with anyone on this list, which is a good thing to me. Like, they're not. No one on this list to me is a retread or someone that I'm like, oh, that would be like, wow, you know what I mean? So I think that is good.
No, nobody on this list is Nate McMillan, to be honest. Somebody who's like, no, I mean, when he got hired, I mean,
that's so mean to McMillan, but yes, I understand.
No, but everything except McMillan, he got hired pretty much proved true, right? He was going to play a more traditional style that was more 90s, wasn't going to be very fast, but they overcame with good defense. And I think you have McMillan, especially Pritchard, because he wanted somebody he could trust because he was just taking over the job and needed somebody who he could kind of like help him kind of build this like foundation. And that's what he did.
Right.
But Millen is the coach that you sort of have. And then you go to your next one that kind of takes the next level. And that's just kind of what Millen is. But like, there's no one's list. So I'm like, oh, he or she is not going to change the way the team plays in a way that's going to move it towards the modern NBA. Because weirdly enough, the Pacers were one of the best 3-point percentage teams. They just weren't taking a lot of threes. And that could be why they're taking high percentage threes most of the time, but they had for a couple of years, I mean, the past 2 years or 3 years, they've been a pretty good 3-point percentage. I mean, they've had top 3 points, you know, between Bojan and Darren Collins and McDermott. They've had high 3-point percent shooters is a thing. And so like why you don't take more threes makes no sense, honestly, with those guys.
Right.
You have that. And Justin Holiday, I think, was up, right? Wasn't at one point this year, and it probably ended up, but like Justin Holiday, Aaron Holiday, and Devin McDermott are all shooting 40%+ from three.
Yep.
And that's so why not take more of
those? And Warren finished over 40%.
Yeah, well that's because he had, you know, the guy
an insane
9 of 12 for four straight games.
It is what it is. So me and Adam had texted about this, and I said this after my Dan Craig segment, but the coaching talk we're probably going to slow down a bunch on outside of new information on specific names because, again, we're kind of at the point of we're bringing up the same points over and over. Obviously, since I did that and said, okay, we're going to slow down on the coaching talk, There was the huge dump from Woj, and then Jay Michael.
Tony will get hired tomorrow.
And Tony got fired, or not got fired, stepped down from, or announced he's not staying.
Literally parted ways with the Rockets.
yes, departed from the Rockets. So it's felt like that was something I said that isn't actually true, but I promise that outside of new information on candidates, we will not be milking the coaching content tree for too much longer, although the way the information is rolling in has been really interesting to watch the whole hiring process unfold. And so far, I think it's been really good. So, yeah.
I'm with you there.
The football 5 minutes we were going to do today is probably not going to happen out of respect for our team's poor performances, right?
All I could say is Philip Rivers is Philip Rivers. He did exactly what you think Philip Rivers would do in a game.
Well, I will follow that up by saying Kirk Cousins is Kirk Cousins. And something you can now relate to is complaining about how terrible Xavier Rhodes is. Because he was awful for the Vikings.
Also not now, very good.
And now he's awful for the Colts. So I can share that sentiment with you, yes, indie people.
That's true. That's true.
And my fantasy team only has 50 points right now, and it's nighttime. So
it makes you feel better. My fantasy just lost on that Zeke touchdown.
Oh, no. My team did terrible. So that is our football 50 seconds.
90 seconds. We're good.
90 seconds. It'll be longer when the season is more interesting.
And the Colts are 2-14. The Vikings are 3.
And the Pacers are season has been farther away. But, yeah, that's our start for the day. So, yeah, any new info on coaches we'll talk about as it happens. But I think we're going to shift to more off-season general stuff this week. I know we're going to talk about the draft a little tomorrow. And by we, I mean me. And me and Adam are going to talk about the slight free agency preview for all of the Pacers guys who could be gone on Wednesday. So be on the lookout for that. Thank you for tuning in to today's Locked On Pacers podcast, and we will see you tomorrow.